willkommen zu einer neuen Folge unseres Podcasts Labor Zukunft – Forschung ohne Kittel, eine Kooperation von Quartier Zukunft und dem Campus Radio Karlsruhe. Mein Name ist Helena Trenks, ich arbeite als wissenschaftliche Mitarbeiterin am KIT und ich freue mich sehr, dass ihr heute wieder eingeschaltet habt. Wenn ihr unserem Podcast schon länger folgt, dann wisst ihr, dass wir bereits ein paar Folgen zum Klimawandel und der Energiewende gemacht haben. Heute wollen wir uns die sozialen Aspekte der Klima- und Energiekrise anschauen. Dabei geht es um den Zugang zu Energie, um Bürgerbeteiligung, finanzielle B- und Entlastungen, Gesundheitsgefahren und Energiearmut. Nora gibt euch einen ersten Überblick über die Zusammenhänge.
Durch die Klimakrise werden Hitzewellen immer häufiger und länger. Die daraus resultierenden Gesundheitsgefahren wie Hitzeschlag- und Kreislaufprobleme sind in der Gesellschaft ungleich verteilt. Insbesondere Kinder, chronisch Kranke und ältere Personen sind besonders gefährdet. Wenn durch zunehmende Trockenheit die landwirtschaftlichen Erträge sinken und die Lebensmittelpreise steigen, trifft das einkommensschwache Haushalte ganz besonders. Alle kennen den Begriff Armut und haben davon ein Bild im Kopf. Doch habt ihr schon einmal von Energiearmut gehört und könnt euch darunter etwas vorstellen? Seit Beginn des Ukraine-Kriegs sind die Verbraucherpreise stark gestiegen, insbesondere jedoch die Energiekosten. So stiegen die Preise im Februar 2022 für Haushaltsenergie, also Strom, Erdgas, Heizöl und Kraftstoffe, um durchschnittlich 22,5% im Vergleich zum Februar 2021. Von Energiearmut spricht man, wenn Menschen ihre Strom- und Gasrechnungen nicht mehr bezahlen können oder durch sehr hohe Energiekosten von Armut bedroht sind. Die finanziellen Belastungen durch die steigenden Energiepreise sind gesellschaftlich ungleich verteilt. Im Jahr 2022 gaben die einkommensschwächsten 10% der deutschen Haushalte 7% ihres Haushaltseinkommens für Heizkosten aus. Die einkommensstärksten 10% jedoch mussten nur 2% des Haushaltseinkommens für Wärme ausgeben. Die Stromkosten stellen eine ähnlich ungleiche Belastung dar. Das Öko-Institut hat diese Zusammenhänge in verschiedenen Studien untersucht. In anderen Ländern gibt es weniger staatliche Sozialleistungen und Abfederungsmaßnahmen, wodurch die Energiearmut oft weiter verstärkt wird. Eine Wissenschaftlerin, die zur Gerechtigkeit im Energiebereich in den USA forscht, ist die US-Amerikanerin Jenny C. Stevens. Wir haben mit ihr darüber gesprochen, wie die Energiewende inklusiver und sozial gerechter gestaltet werden kann. Zu diesen Fragen hat sie im Jahr 2020 das Buch Diversifying Power – Why We Need Anti-Racist, Feminist Leadership on Climate and Energy veröffentlicht. Bevor wir loslegen, gibt euch Helena einen kurzen Überblick zu unserem heutigen Gast.
Jenny Stevens ist die Direktorin des School of Public Policy and Urban Affairs und ist Dean's Professor of Sustainability Science and Policy an der Northeastern University in Boston, Massachusetts. Zusätzlich ist sie im Global Resilience Institute der Northeastern University Direktorin für strategische Forschungskooperationen und arbeitet mit verschiedenen Fachbereichen zusammen. In ihrer Forschung, Lehre und auch in ihrem Buch Diversifying Power – Why We Need Anti-Racist, Feminist Leadership on Climate and Energy fokussiert sich Stevens auf die Integration von sozialen Aspekten in die Energiewende. Sie spricht davon, wie wichtig es ist, soziale Gerechtigkeit, Feminismus und Antirassismus in die Klimawandeldebatte mit einzubringen. Sie meint, dass Sozialwissenschaften und Politik mit Wissenschaft und Technik verknüpft werden müssen, damit soziale Gerechtigkeit gefördert werden kann. Zudem muss Macht neu verteilt werden, wobei es ihr genauer gesagt um Macht über Energie, wirtschaftliche und politische Macht geht. Nur so kann effektiv gegen den Klimawandel vorgegangen werden, schreibt sie. Die Probleme dürfen nicht einzeln betrachtet werden, denn sie sind miteinander verbunden. In ihrem Buch schreibt sie, "We need more bold leaders committed to social justice who recognize how the biggest challenges facing society are linked and that the best opportunities for change are when these challenges are addressed together." Gerade die Corona-Pandemie und auch der Krieg in der Ukraine und die daraus resultierende Energie- und Getreidekrise haben deutlich gemacht, wie sehr soziale und politische Probleme auch mit Umweltproblemen verknüpft sind. Hierzu sagt Stevens, "With climate disruptions becoming more frequent, including intense heavy waves, floods, droughts, wildfires and storms, as well as new infectious diseases like COVID-19, the risk of communities already struggling with disproportionate health problems are heightened." Unsere Kollegin Paula Bögel hat Jenny Stevens getroffen und sie zu ihrem Buch Diversifying Power befragt. Das war 2021, kurz nach der Erscheinung des Buches. Paula hat sie unter anderem gefragt, wie ihre ideale Energiewende aussieht, welche Möglichkeiten kleinere Energiegemeinschaften haben und wie Energieprojekte inklusiver und attraktiver für neue Gruppen gestaltet werden können. Die Antworten haben in der Zwischenzeit nichts an ihrer Aktualität verloren. Aber hört selbst. Da Jenny Stevens Amerikanerin ist, wurde das Interview auf Englisch geführt.
You've written a lot about energy transitions, and I was wondering if you could describe how your ideal energy transition would look like.
For me, what I refer to, or what I am thinking about when I talk about energy transition, and increasingly I use the word energy transformation more than transition, because transition somewhat suggests there's a goal. We know we're going from here to here. We're going to transition from this to this, whereas it's a little bit more open-ended in terms of what's the end point, and really there is no end point. Energy systems are constantly evolving. So transformation is a word I have been using more recently. So the way I think about it is we need to end fossil fuel reliance and move toward a renewable-based society. And that is in terms of how we get there. One of the things I have written quite a bit about, and I've come to realize in my own experience, you know, working in energy, climate and energy policy and technology for the past 20 years, is that we have focused too much on the technology and invested a lot in technology and not enough in technological innovation and social innovation. And I think the reason we haven't been effective and this energy transformation has been slower than it could be or should be, partly because of this focus on technology, technological innovation, and not enough integration of how energy connects with everything that people wake up worrying about, whether it be health, food, education, housing, jobs. And the way I make the case in my work, particularly in the book that I just published, that we will not be able to make the energy transition that we need until we are more inclusive and we connect energy, our energy systems, with the things that most people are worried about that are more immediate concerns that go beyond, you know, your source of electricity or transportation. So I think what really needs to happen, and this is why I call for a change in leadership, change in the approach to energy transformation, is that we need leaders who connect the technological innovation with the social innovation. So we need to move beyond the engineers dominating the policy discussions. We need to move beyond simplistic goals of decarbonization and greenhouse gas emission reductions. And we need to invest in communities, our organizations, our institutions, our policies and practices in ways that enable a broader consideration of what the energy transformation involves and what all the benefits, the co-benefits are, particularly as inequities and disparities among families, households, communities continues to get worse and exacerbate. Too many of our energy policies are actually contributing to that. And so it's the well-off people who have renewable energy and who have access to all the benefits associated with it. And it's lower income people and households and communities that have been underinvested in that are stuck with the older, dirty fossil fuel energy. And we need to flip that around, and we need to really prioritize the communities that have been underinvested for too long. So one of the ways that I envision the energy transformation, like in an ideal world, we would connect energy with everything else. So we would connect, and we would prioritize not just climate as the reason why we need to have an energy transformation, but that it's much more than climate, right? It is economic situation. It is the housing crisis. In the United States, we have an increasing growing number of homeless people and people who are very insecure, be moving around, staying with friends in very housing insecure. So we need to connect the investments in these other social issues that are desperately needed with energy policy, so that that will be the focus, is more the social justice priorities for communities. And then the energy piece is a part of that, but it's not because of climate necessarily. It's almost like the climate benefits could be co-benefits rather than the other way around. Often what's happened, in my view, is most discussions of energy and energy transition focus on the climate benefits, right? And it's motivated by climate change and the climate crisis, and we need to decarbonize, and which is all true, but we need to broaden that justification for why, and that will broaden how. And when we broaden the how, that's actually when we see more progress in the pace and the scale of the transition.
You mentioned community. Would you also say building smaller energy communities is important?
Yes, absolutely. So I've written quite a lot about this idea of energy democracy, which is about redistributing power, literally and figuratively. And it really embraces a vision of a renewable future where there's renewable energy at multiple scales, right? There will be, you know, some large scale mega projects, whether it be offshore or other big utility scale renewable projects of all kinds. And then also at the same time, we really need to invest in local individual households or communities and regionally appropriate, because the most compelling thing about a renewable-based future is that renewable energy resources are everywhere. Every community in the world actually has access to renewable energy resources, whether it's solar and wind, which are accessible in most places. Communities that are near water also have access to water, or ocean and tidal and wave and offshore wind. Communities that are not close to water, often almost everywhere in the world, can access geothermal energy, which we have really underinvested in. And it's a resource that almost every community could be leveraging. And so when we realize and accept that renewable resources are available free to every community, we really need to prioritize investing ways for communities to harness and leverage those resources, because once they do, then you have plentiful, reliable, abundant, perpetual access to energy. And that is what's so transformative. We don't always hear in the policy discussions that framing, right? We hear about, oh, well, fossil fuels energy costs this much, renewable energy costs this much, so that's why we're not doing it yet, or whatever it is. And really, that is a limited perspective. And it's much more than that, because of this, you know, unique capacity and distribution of renewable resources that really is so accessible. And it's also a changed perspective on a future of kind of abundance and like sufficiency and self-local sufficiency, rather than the extractive, competitive, you know, we have to fight over who has access to energy. So that's why it's transformative. And we don't elevate that component enough in our discussions about energy transitions, I think. I mean, many people kind of get that, but it hasn't been elevated to the degree that it could and should be to really understand and be able to describe why it's so much more than climate, right? Why we need want to do this. It can be, the transformation can be so much deeper than the climate benefits that are also important.
Speaking of community energy, you have a lot of impressive examples of leadership in your book. And I was wondering, what were the community energy projects you worked with or have seen over the last few years that you find most impressive? Who did a great job at implementing this local, decentralized, community-based energy systems in a holistic approach?
Within my circle and my experiences in the United States, the examples are actually not that frequent, I would say. You know, it's a growing movement, but it's been really hard because the policy regulations, the jurisdictional challenges, the resistance from the standard utility has really limited the capacity for community energy projects. That isn't to say there aren't some innovative projects, and there definitely are, and they're, you know, at different scales, with just a few neighbors getting together, to larger community-wide, city or town-wide projects that are good examples. I think the place that I've been most involved with is the state of Vermont in the United States, which is a very small state but a state that has a very strong commitment to renewable energy installation, and there's been incentives and there are some community renewable projects. And another unique feature of Vermont is that many, many towns in the state of Vermont actually have energy committees, which is a volunteer kind of group of residents who get together in the evenings or weekends and plan their energy transition priorities and strategize together. And that's really unique, I think. And again, that's kind of speaks to some of the kind of unique local focus and engaged governance system in the state of Vermont, which is not necessarily widespread. And I've read quite a bit and learned quite a bit about differences in other countries, particularly in Germany and other countries in the EU, where there has been more kind of centralized policy to encourage community energy, right? Like centralized decentralization is sometimes what I refer to. And you probably obviously know more about the details of that, but we don't have much of that yet here. Now that we're in the pandemic, there's so much need for investment in so many things, particularly housing and jobs and health, our health system. And many of us are optimistic that there are more and more people in the leadership that see how these issues are connected. And we also, one of the other things I write in the book is that it's really leaders who see how these issues are connected and then also acknowledge that really the only way to really make more substantial change toward a transition is to connect these issues, right? Like if we keep the different policies all segmented, we won't be able to make and incentivize and accelerate the transformation that needs to happen. So there's reason for optimism there.
How can a local energy community be more inclusive for attracting and recruiting new participants?
To be more inclusive, we have to change the conventional model. We need to be innovative in how we support and welcome and encourage community renewable projects. And I think connecting with offering real investment to low-income communities and households and communities that have been left out and don't have time or energy to think about energy innovation, right? Like it's not people's top priority. We can't just keep saying, oh, we wish some of those people would join our project. We have to change the projects so that it makes sense for those people to join. And they will want to join because it solves some of their problems that they have that are their priority. So whether that's linking with jobs, whether it's linking with health concerns and health benefits and public health investments that are also needed in that in those communities, or whether it's connected with housing and transportation and mobility issues and low-income housing, you know, that's another possibility. I mentioned housing is a big issue in the United States, and we need to have universal commitment that all new housing, including low-income housing, or especially low-income housing, that is as energy efficient, you know, zero emissions, renewable, all of that as much as possible, so that it's not trying to convince people to support renewable energy. It's just has to be part of, and it's a benefit to them, right, to be involved. So I think that the idea of changing the conventional approach to community energy is essential in order to be more inclusive. So, and it might mean broadening that it's not just thought of as a community energy project. It's about a healthy, prosperous community initiative that includes energy, but it includes other things as well. So I think that would be my take on that. And again, there aren't that many examples yet, but I think that's what needs to happen. And it's about investing in communities in ways that help people so that the energy component that's novel is a benefit to them, not an additional nuisance or cost or anything like that.
Where do you see the role of science for empowering people and the self-efficiency for leadership in the long term for energy projects? What do you think we as scientists should do?
One is broadening the concept of science to include social science, obviously. And I think there's a danger in the focus on science, particularly in the United States, where so much of our response to the climate crisis and our response to the energy, the need for shifts in energy, have been focused on the science and technology in a kind of, it ends up being exclusive because not everybody relates to the science. Not everybody has access to science education in particular. And obviously there's gender biases in science and racial access issues, particularly here in the United States, where there's huge discrepancies and disparities in educational outcomes of different communities. And obviously there's a role for science and information and to help justify. And I think we've historically put a little bit too much emphasis on the science and then thinking, you know, some people have said, oh, if only people understood more science, then we would have better, more accelerated renewable transformation or better climate policies or whatever. And I don't think that's necessarily a good way of thinking about it because that's the information deficit gap model that you think, oh, we just have to tell people more information and then they'll act differently. And we know there's a lot of science that shows that actually isn't what's needed, right? You have to relate to people in different ways. So I think, and that's where a lot of our investments so far, even in the research, have been in technological innovation and science research, not as much in the social science research and innovation. So, you know, experts keep going back and assuming things that science tells us isn't going to be effective, right? And so there's definitely a role there. And we also need to be humble with our expertise because we can end up excluding people unintentionally if we rely too much on kind of the research and science and in how we communicate and how we assume what is needed for people. So I think there's obviously a very important role, particularly in social science. And I think we need to, especially with communication and more than that, we need to be cautious about that role.
Eine integrative und sozial gerechte Energiewende enthält viele wichtige Komponenten und Aspekte und erfordert individuelle, gemeinsam entwickelte Lösungen. Die von Jenny Stevens geforderte Verbindung zwischen der Energietransformation und sozialen Aspekten lässt sich durch verschiedene Maßnahmen umsetzen. Beispielsweise durch eine Ausweitung der finanziellen Unterstützung einkommensschwacher Haushalte durch den Staat, Maßnahmen zur Senkung der Miet- und Energiekosten sowie Reduktion des Energieverbrauchs. Eine weitere zentrale Forderung in Stevens ist die Einbeziehung von Menschen in die lokale Energiegewinnung. Dies könnte nicht nur durch bürgerfinanzierte Energieparks geschehen, sondern vor allem durch die Einbeziehung von Bürgerinnen in die Planung und Ausgestaltung der Energiewende vor Ort, unabhängig von ihrer finanziellen Situation und ihrem sozialen Hintergrund. Auch unser Projekt Dein Balkonnetz Energie schafft Gemeinschaft untersucht die Potenziale einer sozial-ökologischen Energiewende. Falls ihr noch mehr über Jenny Stevens und das Thema Energiegerechtigkeit erfahren wollt oder genauer wissen wollt, welche Projekte wir zum Thema Energiewende machen, haben wir hier noch ein paar Tipps für euch. Mehr zu Jenny Stevens Forschung und natürlich auch zu ihrem Buch Diversifying Power findet ihr auf ihrer Website. Wie sieht es mit der gerechten Verteilung von Energie und sogenannter Energiearmut in Europa aus? Das Öko-Institut, das Institut für angewandte Ökologie, hat dazu den Bericht How to End Energy Poverty verfasst, den wir euch verlinken. Aus unserem inzwischen abgeschlossenen Projekt Energietransformation im Dialog ist das Erklärvideo Fair Play Energiewende entstanden, das ihr online immer noch finden könnt. Schaut gerne mal rein. In unserem aktuellen Projekt Dein Balkonnetz – Energie schafft Gemeinschaft untersuchen wir die Potenziale von sogenannten Balkonmodulen, kleinen PV-Anlagen für den Balkon oder die Terrasse. Wir erforschen, welche Potenziale diese niederschwellige Technik für die Energiewende hat und wie sich die Nutzung auf den Alltag der NutzerInnen auswirkt. Mehr Projektinfos findet ihr auf unserer Website. Alle Links findet ihr wie immer in den Shownotes. Das war eine neue Folge von Labor Zukunft – Forschung ohne Kittel. Wir freuen uns sehr, dass ihr mit dabei wart. An dieser Folge waren Helena Trenks, Nora Scholz und Paula Bögel beteiligt. Das Interview mit Jenny Stevens wurde bereits im April 2021 das erste Mal in unserem Podcast gesendet und hier aus aktuellem Anlass nochmal wiederholt. Diese Folge ist ab sofort auf campusradio-karlsruhe.de sowie auf Spotify abrufbar. Mein Name ist Helena Trenks und ich freue mich, euch bei der nächsten Folge wieder begrüßen zu dürfen. In der nächsten Episode widmen wir uns dem Thema Saatgutvielfalt für alle und werden uns anschauen, wie die alten und lokalen Gemüsesorten eine zukunftsfähige Landwirtschaft unterstützen können. Und wir besuchen eine Pflanzentauschparty vor Ort. Wir freuen uns, wenn ihr dann wieder dabei seid. Nachhaltige Grüße und bis zum nächsten Mal.